It's 2025, and it's time you embrace the future of toilet cleaning with the Clorox Toilet Wand. The Clorox Toilet Wand is an all-in-one toilet cleaning system that comes complete with a sleek bathroom caddy and disposable scrubbing pads preloaded with cleaning solution. The set even comes with 6 scrubbing pads preloaded with disinfecting toilet cleaner. Just click, swish, and toss for a fuss-free clean. Visit Amazon to purchase your Clorox Toilet Wand today.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, first up, I told you I was going to introduce you to our wonderful business review panel. They're with us here in studio in the form of Nora Casey, an old friend of mine, and indeed the editor of Planet Woman Travel, her latest title. Also joining us is Louisa Meehan, the founder of Woodview HRM. You're very welcome too, Louisa. And we might start with you, Louisa, and tell us, Michael O'Leary backs McGuinness to run for the presidency. We're told, as the headline in today's Irish Independent, could this be a curse or a blessing?
It'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, he's talking about Mairead McGuinness. She worked in the European Parliament. She was EU Commissioner for 4 years. And he's saying that he's certainly who he would be supporting. And I think she seems to be Fine Gael's front runner. She has gone for it before and failed to make the bid back in 2011. I was actually recently at a talk where she was the speaker, and it was my first time to hear her speak, and she came across really down to earth, literally, from a farming background. Oh. She seemed to have a good grasp on some of the key issues and a breadth of knowledge in relation to the economy, the banking sector, some really good ideas. So she would get my backing based on having met her. I don't know who the other candidates are, though, so we'll have to wait and see.
No. Okay, Nora Casey, am I the only former dragon that has no interest in the presidency?
You're asking me that in a bit. I think Dragon's Den is like a feeder for the presidency.
Well, I can tell you, here's one who isn't interested. What about you?
I already lived in the Phoenix Park in a beautiful lodge in the north side of the road.
And you've done your living there,
have
you?
I've done my living there. I think it's the nicest house in the park. But it's a faint praise, I suppose, from Michael O'Leary, because the last time when he launched Peter Burke's candidacy for Fine Gael, you know, he managed to annihilate all the teachers in the country. So he's sort of very dismissive. Why would I want to do that? It's a makey-uppy job. It's a no-nonsense job. And yeah, it's the most overpaid.
He said, I have a real job. Yes. I don't really want a makey-uppy job, even if it pays you whatever it is, 250 or 300 grand.
Exactly. But you know what I think is, I remember coming back here and looking at the lineup for the presidency, which of course is Sean Gallagher, our former Dragon Den colleague. But the last time, people like Joan Freeman and Dana, for goodness sake, they annihilated the lot of them. And I was like, gosh, if somebody's brave enough to stand up there and say, I want to stand for the presidency, yeah, all we do is find dirt on them and see what we can
do.
Well,
one thing that, and again, you've said it yourself there, Nora, you know, the presidency, the campaign, it's a very dirty, down and dirty. Like you would have thought it was a kind of a above all that. But it's as bad as it gets.
Probably for a makey-uppy job, as they call it, you know. And of course, because certain high-profile individuals have come out and declared they're going to stand for the presidency, people are consistently reminding that person that it's really about, you know, kind of cutting ribbons and opening envelopes and going.
Well, you heard it here, folks. Nora Casey not going for the presidency, unlike some other dragons we may know. Now, Louisa Meehan, tell us about the global stock market still falling as investors fret over next Wednesday, which is the US tariffs. I'm going to be talking to Jim Power and Cor McGlusey a bit later on in the show about this very subject. But really, the markets are in turmoil here.
Yeah, there's a lot of fluctuation, mainly downwards across the markets. Next Wednesday, Trump is calling it apparently Liberation Day. And really what this is coming back to is a strong sense of fear and uncertainty. The markets don't like a situation where they don't know what's going to happen. And right now we don't know what's going to happen. Trump has already put serious tariffs in place in relation to Canada, in relation to Mexico, in relation to some other areas. The bullseye certainly seems to be on the EU or Europe, Ireland, the car industry, the pharma industry. But all of these tariffs have real consequences for people on the ground living normal lives, because it is the person on the ground, whether that person's in Ireland with a retaliatory tariff or in the US, it's the normal consumer who's going to pay the price here. It's not Trump.
I think that's a very important point, that the tariff is where the tariff actually gets paid is by the person who imports the goods.
Yeah.
So they are the person who are then pass on the price to the consumer.
I mean, I think
in most cases,
as IBEX chief, you know, Danny McCoy described it as dancing with a gorilla, you know, and given that that's the scenario,
the gorilla wants to stay dancing and you don't.
Yeah, you don't. I was surprised it wasn't down further. I mean, there are 1.25%, 2%. The UK is flat. Anybody, I've been in the UK this week, anyone who's in the UK knows how doom and gloom it is over there with the recent announcements of the spring spending cuts. So we're in this holding pattern where there's all talk all the time. And then there's, you know, one minute you see that there's tariffs, then it's rowing back on tariffs, then there's new threats of tariffs. So as Louisa says, nobody likes uncertainty. And by the way, the reason Trump got in part is that, you know, the US is deflated. You know, it's got households that are really at the pin of their collar, so they can ill afford themselves to struggle with tariffs. Now,
it's hard to see. Like, I think the big thing for us is, you know, are we going to be isolated? Are we going to be lumped in with Europe? Well, that's one big question.
I think, look, we're in Europe and that we are in Europe.
But we might get further isolated in terms of we could be targeted as one of the big 15.
We could.
Like
the Irish Americans are very strong in America and Trump has a connection here. Like Trump has businesses here, so he makes money from Ireland, amount.
Let's see. But the other thing is, you know, when do they get implemented? How long do they last?
Yeah.
What, you know, if the UK economy starts to fall apart because of tariffs,
and
you know, will there be a change in plan? There may well be.
Yeah.
Bobby, there's so little airtime, you know, to digest what he's talking about, because one minute it's tariffs, then it's the signal leak, and then it's issues around Doge. And, you know, then I was reading last night about the court case that stopped him closing down the financial watchdog. So there's this kind of feeling you're on a roller coaster and you don't know where to end up.
Completely. There's a small piece in here. It's a very small little line talking about the increase in funding that we're putting in across Europe into our military. And that is as a direct result of the uncertainty that Trump is causing across the global economy, both in terms of economics, but also in terms of political unrest. That is something that we need to pay more attention to. It's like, how do we protect ourselves? Yeah. How, as Europe, do we ensure that we can, not that I'm pro-war, but how do we ensure that we can protect ourselves if things do get really complicated?
Yeah. Well, a texter here says, next Wednesday, apocalypse now for Ireland. Let's move on. Very saddened to see the front page of the Irish Times, Nora, telling us that Gol is to lay off 30% of its staff due to aid cuts. And this is really now where we see the fallout of some of these policies.
Yeah.
You know, at ground level where, you know, these agencies working, doing super work, tireless work in developing countries, and it all then just, you know, has to be axed.
And it makes it very real when you see that they might be saying goodbye to 900 people globally. I know that in Ireland it's 28, but Concern also had come out some time ago saying they were worried about USAID. I sit on the board of an organisation that relies hugely on USAID. So we have crisis talks, and we have had since January about the cuts. So it's one of these very difficult situations. The UK, you know, cut its foreign aid as well. We're in a narrative at the moment where people are not worried about anybody outside of their own country.
Yeah.
And this is feeding into the idea that we need to look after our own. We don't want any of those foreigners coming in here. We don't want to be spending money on them. And by the way, what on earth are we doing going off to other countries helping people?
And this is the net result of that.
And then you're reading these stories about, you know, particularly Gol working in Ethiopia with children with malnutrition. And we've gone from, you know, one of the countries that proudly boasted probably the most charitable people. And now we're almost at the opposite end of the spectrum sometimes.
And it's not just the US, as Nora mentioned, Louisa. UK aid has been cut by 40%. Belgium and France, the Netherlands, have cut theirs by 30%. France by 37%. So Nora's right. Like,
it's across
everybody
the board.
Is looking at inward rather than outward and saying, well, we got to look after them. But the net result of that is as Nora says, you know, projects like that in Ethiopia being axed.
Look, I mean, the piece that's in here is the net result is that there are children under the age of 5 dying because there's interruptions to their food. You know, that's what's happening. That's what Gol have talked to. For me, when I was reading this, and, you know, it links in with tariffs, albeit it's not about tariffs, but it is about the reduction or the focus of you know, myself. Let's focus on how do I protect myself? And I'm talking about what Trump is thinking, not me. And the question for me, and it's a question I think for all of us, is what do we want to prioritize? Do we want to prioritize individual wealth above all else? Do we want to prioritize a society whereby five-year-olds can survive because they have enough food? What do we, because we can't prioritize everything. Mm-hmm. So what do we want as a society, and how are we going to focus on what really matters whilst ensuring that there is wealth generation and creation, and it's great for business, but we don't have to do that to the detriment of investing in charities and supporting people who are less well off. Hmm.
Sorry to stay on the sort of dark side of things, Nora, but tourism, again, we're reading across all the newspapers this morning. The Daily Mail is telling us the tourism crisis point looming as visitor numbers collapse. Now, I would say it seems to be over a very short period of time here that this analysis is coming out telling us that we had 30% fewer tourists last month than the similar months to the year before. But it is a worrying trend if it is to continue, but I wouldn't panic just yet.
It's a mild worry. That's the way I put it. I mean, we tend to get very excited about these numbers, but at the end of the day, it was 129,000 tourists. Don't forget, I travelled extensively during January, February, March. The weather was dreadful. 9 times out of 10, there were delays, there were fogs.
Oh, with that storm in January and all that.
So it never would. I travel because I have to, you know, but it wouldn't encourage you to travel. But the other thing behind the stats is the majority of people are coming home to visit family and friends. So would you call them tourists? And they're coming from the UK. And I lived in the UK for 22 years and I was one of those people who came home to see family and friends. And that's a cyclical thing. If you've seen them at Christmas, you may not be going in January, but it doesn't mean, if you look at it in the round over the course of the year, maybe we should get worried. But of course, the hospitality sector, Bobby, has come out and said, and that's because we haven't got the VAT reduction, you know, and the hotels. It was interesting actually to see Paul Gallagher, also in the Mail from the Irish Hotels Federation, saying he thought it was all a bit of a red herring, that they were only marginally down in terms of their occupancy in hotels. Now, I'm not sure if they did.
I think that was in an interview with Matt Cooper. And Matt Cooper said in retort to that, that we're so used to the industry complaining about VAT and other costs, it's unusual to hear them say anything that things are better than others say they are. So Matt Cooper there really calling the Hotels Federation out on that.
But people then scout around to see what could be the problem. Is it about the high cost of hotels? Is it the high cost of hospitality? Is it the crime wave? Is this a really popular narrative perpetrated by one or two individuals?
Yeah, a couple of things I would worry about. The dollar and the rate is going the wrong way for tourism at the moment. That's one thing. Also, if there's all this geopolitical stuff, people may stop traveling to a degree.
You're hitting the nail on the head. I mean, what the elephant in the room is, we're talking about tariffs, you know, somebody erratic in the White House, all kinds of things happening across Europe. Our next door neighbour in the UK struggling. And if you're in London, you'll see how much it's struggling. And then we're saying we're down a little bit last month, you know, so I'm not too sure that we should be surprised by that.
Okay.
And look, and it's not covered here, but there's been a lot of reports in the news over the last few weeks of US citizens being told, be careful where you travel, you might not get back in, because they may not have they may have a visa, but they may not have the exact right visa. And there's people getting stopped at immigration, you know, German people going on holidays being told, actually, sorry, we don't know if you're staying, and going into detention centres. So the issue around travel is both directions. But with 49% of travellers to Ireland coming from the UK and 10% from the US, albeit that the people I know in hospitality quite like the US ones and the tipping, 49%, that's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm surprised the figure is as low as 10% from the UK. I would have thought it was higher.
Well, 10% from the US.
For the US, sorry.
Oh, no, the UK is the highest.
Yeah. The US just spend a lot. There may not be 10% of the spending.
Yeah, I wonder, do they? Like, if you're on a bus down to West Clare for 3 hours down, 3 hours back, how much do you actually get to spend?
No, but for a lot of them, they hire like private drivers and there'd be decent spending on that. So we'll see.
All right, let's move to it. There's a good analysis by Joe Brennan in today's Irish Times about Guinness, Diageo, Is Guinness owner Diageo on activist investors' radar as their stock languishes at an 8-year low? Yeah. I like Joe Brennan's analysis because he gets right under the bonnet. He looks at, you know, the sort of marketing trends around Guinness and all the positive stuff about why sales are up. But then there's all these other underlying trends at why is the stock down 20% so far this year? Why is was it the third worst performer on the FTSE 100 index? Exactly. And why is it at its lowest level in more than 8 years?
Yeah, the worst performer actually in the FTSE 100, but it's at its lowest in 8 years. So the big question, and Joe Brennan's well worth reading because it's a fantastic, as you say, fantastic piece. But I suppose the good news is Guinness is booming because of Ed Sheeran and Niall Horan and Kim Kardashian and splitting the G. So for those of you who don't know, it's when the fluffy stuff aligns with the G on the Guinness on your glass.
Gulping until the horizon between the stout and the creamy top lines up with the middle of the latter G on a branded glass. Yes. That's exactly what you're saying, Nora.
So they call them Ginfluencers, which is a great name. And Don Julio, thankfully, is doing very well at 23%, also endorsed by a whole host of celebrities. And if you remember, there was a big, what Joe refers to, there was a big rumour that Guinness was going to be sold along with Moët Chandon, their 34% stake back in January, and they kicked it to touch for 10 billion. Now, that's not small potatoes, right?
Yeah.
But overall, the Diageo, Guinness Diageo, is down 8 years. Now, why is that? He's trying to look at whether is it pre-COVID normalization or is it, which I suspect it is, a growing awareness of the health issues around alcohol.
And youngsters are no longer drinking to the way they used to. I think that's a big part of it.
It's our age group that should be worried about the alcohol and the health issues because it's where it starts to hit. But it's actually Gen Z are beginning to do that sober curious thing and decide that alcohol is not the most important thing in their lives. Yeah. You see that across the streets of Dublin.
It kind of tells you as well, Louisa, that like marketing can really only look after so much. You know, even though you can get sales up, you can get influencers talking, you can be doing all this cool stuff. But if the underlying business is shrinking,
you've got a problem. Yeah. And, you know, when I read through this and I read it a couple of times, it felt to me like the strategy of the organization appears to be confused, that they don't quite know where they're going or where their direction is. I could be misreading that, but that was the feeling that I got from it, because there's, you know, Guinness is called the cash cow and there's lots of money in it, lots of growth within it, but then they tried to sell it. Pimm's, they tried to sell them like to people. I didn't even know Pimm's was still on the market. Nobody was interested in buying it in terms of the brand. I'm not sure anybody really buys it in terms of the product either. But
obviously not a yachty.
I'm not a Pimm's drinker. I don't think I've ever had it. It just felt a little confused. And it's certainly the tariffs from Donald Trump in relation to Diageo are having an impact as well. You know what? Diageo is going to survive. But when you read through this, I think of smaller businesses, smaller Irish businesses like Drumshambo Gin and the impact of tariffs where they have 30% going.
I think you're dead right that, again, the elephant in the room is the tariffs.
It's the tariffs.
With this business and what it could do to it. Nora, can I ask you about Tesla? Targeting Tesla, we're told by Cancelin in today's Irish Times, will not help European cars.
Yeah.
What are your own thoughts on that?
Well, this is going to come as a little surprise that we should defend Tesla, because everybody's been gleefully happy that Tesla's been like 46% down in Europe. So the car industry, not that we make any of them ourselves, but there's a huge issue around buying carbon credits. Now, not only do they have to contain with the whole issue of the tariff wars for cars, the issue around China flooding the market with low-cost cars. They also have these punitive emissions limits set by the EU. They have to be down 15% from 2021 or face a huge fine. Where do they get the offset of those emissions? Primarily from electric car companies.
Yeah, which is interesting.
And from Tesla, which I never even thought of. So in the EU, 49% of sales are down for Tesla. But that is really bad news for us, because Tesla make 2.76 billion in revenue from having a deal with people like Honda, Ford, Toyota, Mazda and a whole host of others, where they buy electric car credits, carbon credits, to offset their emissions.
Yeah.
So it's this kind of very strange scenario where you think, right.
It's almost an economic model around legislation.
Yeah.
That it's nothing to do with actually making cars. It's about selling your carbon credits.
It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah. Louisa, very high profile case over the last number of weeks around the Web Summit. No winners, but no losers in the Web Summit case, according to Matt Cooper in today's Irish Mail. I don't know what your thoughts on this are, but people were sort of rubbing their hands salaciously saying, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to get 10 weeks of absolute box office entertainment here around this. But I think the case was settled, and I think there are a number of losers. Paddy Cosgrave being one of them, I would suggest.
Yeah, I would go with there was no winners. I'd have stopped there. I think that they've all lost. It's embarrassing. They talk about this being corporate men behaving badly. Absolutely it was. Two of them were paid out by the third. So Paddy Cosgrave has paid the other two individuals, Dara Hickey and David Kelly, an amount that hasn't been declared. More than likely well in excess of 10 million after they've paid all their legal fees. It really strikes to the heart of the importance of mediation, negotiation, conversation. They should have been smart enough for this to never end up in the courts.
Yeah.
They should have had a legal team that would have worked towards a negotiated settlement outside of ending up on the front page of the newspapers, because it's just quite embarrassing.
But Louise, you know why that happened?
Oh,
I
do.
They were friends.
Yeah.
So friendship and business, I think, are strange.
Yeah. Yeah. When friendship falls badly in business, it is.
Did you hear the emotion?
Logic goes out the window.
You hear the emotion in court about people's hurt feelings.
Yeah. Logic goes out the window.
It's their egos.
It's like when families fall out, you know?
But Nora, this would have been, if we go back to COVID times, when the valuation around Web Summit would have been a very different animal.
Yeah.
A much lower number.
Yeah.
This could have been settled for a fraction of the costs.
The
profile around.
And the one thing I do love is Paddy Cosgrave, and I wish I had more of that of a CEO in me, gave himself this wonderful salary when he came back.
Yeah.
And a 1 million bonus, signing on bonus.
Yeah. There you go. When you do a deal with yourself, Nora.
I looked it up when we were preparing. I looked it up, and the valuation in relation to this court case, the estimated valuation of the Web Summit is between 280 and 360 million for a conference. That is a lot of money.
Yeah. Finally, and very finally, the parents who read the Gruffalo 416 times a year. Now, I've recently got a new grandson, and I love reading him stories.
Yeah.
I'm an expert on Miss Rachel, on Spot, and all these things. But it really is amazing about parents reading goodnight stories for their children.
Oh, look, I am that parent. I mean, not anymore. My children won't allow me to read the Gruffalo to them. But I was laughing, like, 460 times a year when my younger was into the Gruffalo, it felt like it was 416 times a week. He would read it on repeat 5 or 6 times in one sitting. What's really, I mean, the Gruffalo, the story is amazing. It was really close to my heart. And there is a walk in Wells House for all of those Gruffalo lovers out there. There is a Gruffalo walk in Wells House, which is amazing.
Last word to you, Nora. A mouse took a stroll through the deep, dark wood.
Yes. Well, I have to say, I can see you read the Gruffalo. So when Dara was younger, firstly, he very quickly decided that Richard, my husband, worked for the BBC and had something called a warm chocolate voice in radio terms. So Dara very quickly, when he could talk, said, I prefer daddy reading, which is great. And when I was away, I learned off the Hungry Crocodile so much that I would call him and tell him I could see through the phone. And he really believed I did. But actually, I'd read it so often.
Good job. Well done. Thank you to Nora Casey. Thank you to Louisa Meehan.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
And that's a commercial break.
Nice. Ooh, hear that? My neck cracked. So satisfying.
Speaking of satisfying, I just used a Clorox toilet wand.
Ooh, with the cleaner already in it.
Yes. All in one. The brush just clicks on.
Click.
Then you swish, swish, swish. And pops right off into the trash.
Just click.
Swish.
Bop.
Clorox. Clean feels good.
Clean feels good.
Oh, we're back.
Use as directed.